Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pagans Tonight Radio Network, the voice of the pagan world. Pagans Tonight is sponsored by Witchschool.com, your anyone, anytime, anywhere magical education.
And hello, everyone. This is Samira Luna with the Tree of Life Hour. And Raven Fire will not be with us tonight. She had to work, so hopefully she'll be back with us probably in a couple weeks. I think she has to work next week, too. So, like I said, this is the Tree of Life Hour, and the Tree of Life Hour is brought to you by the Tree of Life Community Center, a nonprofit group in the Louisville, Kentucky area that's trying to create space for earth-based religions and philosophies. And our show is all about the pagan community, things we think the pagan community should know or be talking about. And tonight I have a special guest. It is Reverend Sean Sanford Beck. And do you just want to go by Sean, or how should I address you?
Oh, Sean is just fine. That's great.
Okay. All right. Well, Sean actually had his name floating around Facebook here recently with an article where he was interviewed, and also an interview now I see too, that you are a Christian priest and also a druid. And I'm going to actually let you take it over for a minute and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your history and how you got into the path.
Sure. Yeah, so I'm an Anglican priest in the Anglican Church of Canada, a bit north of you folks. And I've been a priest for about 15 years, I'm also a practicing druid. I'm a member of the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids, have been for a couple of years now. What the interview was about that sort of put this out in the public was sort of me telling my story of how I've become, over the years, Christo-pagan. How sort of my reading and experience and interest and fascination and respect for neo-paganism has blended with my Christian faith. So this is something that I guess I've been much more out in the open about for the past year or so. But then the interview that the national, our CBC, our national radio, did about that sort of propelled it much further out into the open about a month and a half ago. So that's me, and just really good to be here. Thanks for the invitation to be with you tonight.
Yes, and part of the reason that I really would like for you to be on the show was I have a friend that's Christo-pagan here locally, and she has been on the show. It's probably been a couple years, though, since she's been on the show, because we've been in it for 5 years now. So she was on the show, and she discussed her path. Of course, it was very personal to her, because she didn't know any other Christo-pagans. And then this past year at Pagan Unity Festival in Tennessee, there was a girl there at the VIP roundtable they had, and she was talking about how she felt and how she believed, and she was describing Christo-paganism, but she didn't know there was a word for it. So she kind of found it on her own also. She hadn't ever heard the term, and she kind of felt like an outcast at the time because she wasn't sure what direction she was going to in, if this was something new or if someone else had done it too or anything like that. And then also recently, there has been a group on Facebook for pagans, and there are debates that always go back and forth when Christo-paganism comes up. So I guess, though, to start off with, how did you start, like, what piqued your interest that you started even looking at paganism?
Well, it's always been an interest for me. I think always, even going back into my childhood and my teen years, I think I was interested in, I guess it started with an interest in martial arts and then Eastern religions. And that sort of led me a little bit into, you know, sort of the larger New Age questions of things. And then within that, I started to encounter different books that were actually about, you know, ceremonial magic or neo-paganism. Starhawk, of course, was probably the biggest one for me in terms of a real strong influence. So I've been reading paganism for a long time. At the same time, I became a Christian when I was a teenager. I didn't really grow up strongly Christian. I didn't grow up in the church, but I had a conversion experience when I was a teenager. And unlike some of my friends who sort of said, okay, and thus everything else has got to go out the window, I never really did that. I just sort of quietly kept reading in a lot of different areas of religion, not just Christianity. And one of my favorites was paganism. And it just kept going for me. I think I was really drawn, I think as a lot of pagans are, to, you know, the aspect of the divine within nature. And I was really drawn to the feminine face of divinity, and as well just a sort of a magical sense that, you know, the whole world was alive, is alive. You know, now what I would call an animistic sensibility, but I think growing up it was just this sense that the world was a very magical place. And somehow for me that coexisted with my Christian faith. Not always well. I think it took me a lot of years to really integrate the two, and it probably really wasn't until a couple of years ago that I felt they were integrated fully enough that I could sort of, you know, come out of my own broom closet, so to speak. And of course, by that time, I'd already been ordained as an Anglican priest for over a dozen years. So it was a bit of a risk to come out, but fortunately I've got a bishop who, you know, is fairly open-minded, and some good colleagues who are pretty open-minded, and so it hasn't been a really big deal. But I think, you know, Christo-paganism, to go to what you were saying about your friend and about how, you know, she was feeling like, is she the only person there? You know, is anybody else walking that path? I think this Christo-paganism is a fairly, you know, fairly recent phenomenon and fairly openly defined right now. Like for me, the way I would define it would be, you know, it's a spirituality that blends the two religions, or the two spiritual paths, I should say, but that blend can look really, really different depending on each different person. And oftentimes, right. I think Christo-pagans face, I think, a fair bit of, if not outright hostility, at least questioning from both what I would call parent communities.
Yes, and I've actually seen that in the large pagan group I'm in on Facebook, where some people are like, you can't do that, that they contradict each other. And most people that I've met, they have kind of formed their own opinions about, at least that are Christo-pagan, the two people I've met that are Christo-pagan, they kind of have formed like a whole mesh thing. So, you know, it doesn't compete with each other like some people think it would.
I think a big part of it is the way each person defines Christianity and defines paganism. So, for instance, if one's view of Christianity is a very sort of hardcore fundamentalist version of Christianity, or a very, you know, deeply conservative Catholic form of Christianity, then yeah, I mean, somehow those two, you know, Christianity and paganism are not going to work together. But there's a lot of different, and this is something that I think maybe isn't as well known within the neo-pagan community, that there's a lot of different types of Christianity, and some are very, very conservative and literalist, and hostile, and some are very you know, liberal and open-minded and take much more of a metaphorical view of interpreting scripture and are, you know, open to experiencing spirituality in a different way. So, yeah, I think, you know, part of it really depends on a person's definition of things. And also a person's past experience. You know, I suspect from my own experience of friends who are pagans, many of them come out of very rigorous fundamentalist Christian backgrounds. And so, you know, coming into paganism, there's a big sigh of relief to have sort of escaped those traditions. And so when they hear the word Christianity, they can't really imagine anything other than what they grew up with and other than what was sort of oppressive to them. So I don't know, maybe
right,
that's where some of the conflict comes. Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
And I have to say, I was actually pretty lucky. The background I came from growing up, I grew up Christian and I grew up Baptist, and which
right.
is completely different from Southern Baptist.
Right, yeah.
So the Baptist church I grew up in was actually pretty open-minded. You know, our youth group, we had discussions about everything. And I don't ever remember us actually, like, bad-mouthing any religion or bad-mouthing homosexuality or anything. We actually sat down and had discussions. And
right.
that's what I know. And I don't know anything that's even, you know, even more strict. Just personally speaking, I know there's ones out there, but I know I was never part of them, so I don't know exactly how they work. So
right, yeah.
But, now, there's something specific I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned it in your interview on the national station, and then you also mentioned it a moment ago, the feminine aspect
sure.
of God. Now, here's
yeah.
my question. Is that, do you consider the feminine aspect as a totally different deity, or do you consider it to be like kind of two faces of the same deity?
For me, so because I'm a Trinitarian monotheist, as you know, as most Christians are, the feminine face of God is not, in my experience, is not a different being. It's simply the ability to relate to sort of all three persons of the Trinity in both male and female and non-gendered terms. So, you know, for me, God is both Father and Mother. For me, the Holy Spirit, I'll often refer to the Spirit as Sophia, or Lady Wisdom. Even the second person, so you know, Jesus and Christ, I'll often refer to the second person as the cosmic Christ, which is, you know, who is beyond male and female. So I think for me, this it's more a matter of really embracing.
Well, it looks like we lost Sean for a moment, so I'm going to give him a few minutes to call back. So I am going to play a short song while I'm waiting to see if he can call back in. So I'm going to play Dar Williams. No, let's not play that one. Sorry, I want to play something a little bit shorter. I'm going to play Kiva, There Was an Old Woman, and hopefully Sean will be back with us as soon as this is over.
There was an old woman tossed up in a basket 19 times as high as the moon, and where she was going I couldn't but ask it, for in her hand she carried a broom. Old woman, old woman, cried I, oh wither, so high, to sweep the
Old woman,
Back, and Sean was able to join us back again. And welcome
Hello.
Back. And let's see, we were talking about the female aspect of God, and you discussed how cosmic Jesus and everything. And what occurred to me while you were talking was really outside of our human bodies, I've always heard the soul doesn't have a gender. So
you know,
that kind of makes sense to me what you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, even among sort of, you know, sort of normal Christian theologians, there's big debates about sort of how gender relates to God and as well as to the human soul, right? And for some people, it's sort of this sense of genderless. And in other people's minds, it's more a sense of what I call ambigendrous, so sort of like every gender you could possibly imagine. Or sometimes I might talk of God as being transgendered, like not just beyond gender, but across all types of gender lines. So for me, it's a matter of, you know, embracing a bigger, you know, more expansive type of language, both for divinity and for the human soul as well.
So, okay, first of all, I don't know much about the Anglican Church. Can you tell me a little bit about the church and how strict or how lenient it is as far as other beliefs and other religions?
So for Anglicans, it really, it depends where you are. It varies regionally quite a bit. But even within a certain region, like for instance in my diocese, which is a small region, a small geographic part of the Anglican Church of Canada, we have a lot of diversity. So we have people and priests who are probably more liberal than I am, and we've got people who are almost, you know, near fundamentalist, and all in the same church. So we call ourselves, we talk about ourselves in terms of being a big tent church. That means if you've got a picture of a great big sort of circus tent almost, we try and stretch it out as far as we can so that as many different types of people will be able to find their place within the tent. And so that means that I rub shoulders on a regular basis with people all across the theological spectrum, people who would be, you know, totally embrace the goodness of other religions, to some people, not very many of them, but some people who would think anybody who's not a Christian is sort of in danger of hellfire. So the Anglican Church, although it tends to lean more liberal, actually has a whole bunch of different variety within it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, just out of curiosity, because when you start talking about Big Tent and different people coming in, it kind of reminded me of the Universalist Church. But I don't, honestly, I don't know how big the Universalist Church is. I know it's all through the United States, and I'm assuming it's in other countries because it's fairly big here, and there's a lot of pagans and Christians both that go.
Right. Yep.
So
we've got Universalists here in Canada too. A very small number of them compared to sort of the eastern seaboard of the U.S., which is sort of their home ground. I'd say that the Anglican Church is probably not, doesn't allow for as wide a variety as the Unitarian Universalists do. But as a Christian denomination, it's pretty wide.
Okay. So when, okay, so I guess I'm not sure if this will be funny or kind of serious or what, but when you first came out of the broom closet, when you first started telling people that you were pagan and Anglican, how was the reaction?
Well, first of all, I'm careful to tell people that I'm Christo-pagan. So I'm that blend, right? Rather than specifically sort of full-blown pagan. So Christo-pagan, when I come out, most of the time, people are just sort of curious, because they've never encountered this sort of thing before. They're usually just curious and ask me a bit more about what that actually means and looks like. I have had some people who get quite hostile about it, although not as many as I feared. I mean, in some ways, when I started coming out, I sort of thought there would be, burning crosses on my front lawn or something, but there hasn't been. There's been a bit of hostility, but most of the time it's just curiosity. And then when I did the interview on the CBC, I mean, I literally spent the next 2 weeks responding to people's emails and Facebook messages from all over the world, people who were saying, that's me, that's my spiritual path too. I didn't know anybody else did that. So I was really surprised actually at how positive a response there was. I had no idea. I knew there were some people out there, and I suspected there would probably be a handful, but there's just a lot of people out there who are in their own way walking what I would call a blended spiritual path or a dual spiritual path. Some of them are ministers in church. Others are sort of dedicated lay people in church. Other people are not in the church at all, but they still have an attachment to their childhood faith. Some of them are have left the church long ago and are pagan. Totally pagan, but still have a love for Jesus and Mary and the saints. So there's this wide variety of people that responded really positively. And, I was actually I was very surprised that there wasn't more open hostility.
Well, that's really great that you haven't really experienced that much hostility. Now, as far as within the church itself, when they first found out, how did they react to it?
Again, very, very similar. My bishop, who is my boss, essentially, he listened to me. He asked a few questions. He made sure that I was still wanting to be an Anglican priest. And as I said on the other interview, I said, he's more concerned that I'm just doing my job well, which I do. I try my best to do my job as a priest. So he wasn't upset about it. Now, he's probably got, a file of letters that he's received from other people who have, who have raised concerns, and that's pretty normal. I'm sort of used to church controversy because I've been very outspoken on different things. Like, I've been pretty open about my support for gay and lesbian people in the church, and went through a bunch of church conflict with that. So, I mean, my file, so to speak, there's a lot of people who sort of know me as somewhat notorious. So I don't worry too much about that. By and large, the people that I work with on a regular basis, they're fine with it.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, into more details of how you practice itself. Now, you followed the Druid path along with your Anglican path. How do you incorporate that in to, because I know you mentioned in the other interview that you have, I believe you call it your daily office, which I guess is prayers and such.
That's right, yeah.
Is there a specific way that you incorporate your Druidic path into that?
Yeah, you know, it used to be a number of years ago, I tried to sort of, I would do my prayers sort of separately. Like I would sit down somewhere and do some Druid meditations, and then I would do sort of the prayers that I did out of the Christian prayer book. Now what I find works best, though, is I really do integrate the two. And I do my prayers as I'm doing my chores. So I'll try and describe that a little bit. So I live on a farm in sort of central northern Saskatchewan, and we live off-grid right by a lake. So we don't have any power other than a bit of solar power, and we don't have running water, and we farm. So, a lot of my daily routine is, you know, like the Buddhists say, it's chopping wood and carrying water. I'm the person who does that. You know, start the wood fire in the morning. And so what I've done is woven together, you know, the different prayers and visualizations and spiritual exercises that come from both traditions, Druid and Christian. I've woven them into my daily routine. So, for instance, when I'm milking the cow, one of the things I do is I sing a chant to her. And that chant is based on an old Celtic prayer that asks St. Bridget to bless the cow. You know, and as many people know, St. Bridget is also Breed, or the goddess Breed, right? So there's this sort of weaving of all of it together, along with sort of my daily life out in nature, just doing the things that you know, that a rural person does. So that's sort of how my practice on a regular basis works.
And I don't know much specifically about the Druid path itself. I consider myself kind of eclectic. I know some general stuff about the Druid path. I've been at a few rituals, or conclaves, I should say. I've been at a couple of Druidic conclaves. But now, does the Druid path actually use, like, magic spells, you know, focusing energy?
Yeah, it does, although the Druidry is fairly diverse, so there's different paths within the Druid path. Some people really focus heavily on spell work, other people not so much. But it is there as part of the tradition. Yeah.
Okay. So do you incorporate that into your path also, by chance?
I do.
I know,
yeah.
At least, because I know I've always, when someone asks me, well, what's a spell, I actually consider it very close to prayer, except that instead of sending the energy or the prayer to God, I'm sending that energy directly to what I want done. That's how I always describe it, that they're similar.
Right.
So I was just, how you incorporate it in your own practice.
Yeah. I mean, I differentiate a bit between magic and prayer, but I agree, they're very closely related. So the way that I most often use, you know, let's call it energy work, for lack of a better term. You know, it's, for me, it's not deliberate spell casting so much. It's more energy work. And one of the ways I do this is I have at the back of our farm yard, I have a little area in the trees that, you know, is my grove. And in the middle of that grove, I have a stone that's planted into the ground. It's not one of those great big Druid stones that you see at Stonehenge or anything. It's just a small rock that's planted into the ground. But what I do on a regular basis is I'll do, I'll cast a circle in a druid manner going around the edges of my grove. So invoking the four elements, the four directions, and as well as invoking God, calling on God to be present there. And then I will spend time at that central stone, basically laying my hands on it and basically blessing it. But as I bless or pour energy into that stone, what I'm imagining is the energy going out throughout the entire farm. So into the mineral realms below the earth, into the lake, which is right on the shore of, our farm is right on the shore of the lake, blessing the lake. I'll, in my mind, I will sort of travel astrally, you might say, or just in the imagination, you might say, all around the farm itself, to the pastures, to where the cattle and horses are, to our various homes that are here on the farm, because we live sort of communally. There's several families living together, and I will just through the stone pour energy to bless all of those different parts of the farm and all of the different beings on the farm. So whether that's human beings or the animal people or spirit people, what have you, the ancestors, I'll just spend 15 or 20 minutes on a regular basis. It's not every day, but on a regular basis, doing that type of blessing within the grove. So that's the type of sort of the regular type of magic that I would do. And I would think there would be, other druids who would do similar types of things. They may describe it in different ways and wouldn't necessarily call on Christ when they're doing that in the same way that I do. But it that's sort of a key part of the druid path, is being in touch with the land itself.
All right. So I know you've written a book, and I believe I think I saw that you wrote a book called Christian Animism. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Sure. Well, it's just a small book. It's actually more like an extended essay, but I'm sort of proud of it because it's actually the first book of its kind in the world right now. There are some other theologians who are working on this topic of sort of how one can be an animist and a Christian at the same time. But so for me, it was really sort of exploring what Christians can learn from other traditions that are already animist traditions. So I looked at Wicca and Neopaganism. I looked at Cree traditions, because my neighbors here where I live are Cree folks. I looked at engaged Buddhism and at Celtic Christianity in its old form, like from sort of the 5th to 7th century over in Ireland and Scotland and Wales, as well as a form that's called Enochian Apocalypticism, which is, you don't need to know much about it. It's just another type of tradition that I was looking at. And sort of seeing how each of those traditions did animism and trying to say, well, what can Christians learn from this? And then after I explored those traditions, I tried to begin to construct sort of a theoretical worldview that would allow Christians to even begin to imagine what it might be to become animist. Because I think for a lot of people, not just Christians, but just people in general, this idea that every being is actually a person is very odd. It takes a lot of getting used to for most people. So to think about, rocks and trees and plants and animals and mountain ranges and lakes as not just creatures and not just things, but actually as as people, as fellow people, that's a big stretch for a lot of folks. So I was just trying to sort of lay the groundwork for some of that. And I think the neo-pagan community has done a really good job at, you know, at exploring what that means for largely for Western people who are not used to thinking in those terms. In your circles, would most folks sort of consider themselves animist as part of their practice?
I would say, yeah, I would say that a lot of people do consider themselves animist, as in, yeah, in the idea that everything has an energy, a soul, as, you know, something that makes it an individual entity.
Right.
So, now, if someone wanted to read your book, how would they be able to find it?
The best way is, and I hate to say it, but the best way is actually through Amazon. It was published by a small UK publisher. So if your listeners were in the UK, they could get it through Christian Alternative Press of John Hunt Publishing. But for those who are in the States or in Canada, it's usually actually easier to get it through Amazon.
Okay. So now for people that are just discovering their Christo-Pagan path and are more interested in it, do you have anything that you suggest, like any books or groups or Facebook pages or anything that you suggest that might be able to help them?
Yes and no. I mean, there is a good book out called Christo-Paganism that Llewellyn published, must be almost 15 years ago now. So that's a good resource. But I would say probably reading somebody like Matthew Fox, especially if it's somebody who's Christian, becoming Christo-Pagan, Matthew Fox is a really good place to start. I do write online. I blog at Pagan Square, which is the Witches and Pagan blog community. I run a blog there specifically around Christo-Paganism. There's another book that was written by a fellow Canadian, and I have it here somewhere. It's called The Path of the Christian Witch by Adelina St. Clair. And I'd also recommend that one, especially for folks who are looking specifically at a Wiccan Christian blend. So that's The Path of a Christian Witch. And that was also published by Llewellyn probably a decade or so ago. So those are some places to start. I'd say if a person does a Google search on just Christo-Paganism, one of the things that you notice is how wide a variety there is out there. There's folks who are fully pagan, but who embrace Jesus and Mary, who would consider themselves Christo-Pagan. There are folks who are, like myself, who are fully Christian, but who embrace aspects of paganism and blend it. Then there's also folks who are what I would call Gnostic. They're walking a Christian Gnostic path. Who would also consider themselves Christo-Pagan. So there's a whole whack of stuff out there on the internet.
Okay. Well, we are reaching the end of the show. So is there any other advice you might want to give someone or anything else that you might want to put out there for people to know?
I guess my advice to those who are, you know, interested in exploring this path would really be, you know, stay true to your own heart. I know it's that's very sort of glib, and of course everybody knows that. But with this particular path, it's so new, aroused so much opposition from both sides of the spectrum, that for a person to step out on that path sometimes feels really, really lonely. So I would just say to whoever's walking that path, stay true to your heart and reach out to others who are also walking that path, because we are out there. And I guess that's what I'd have to say.
Okay. And then if, and I don't know if you want to put it out there or not, but if someone wanted to get a hold of you, or if there's any events that you have coming up that you're part of that you want to let everyone know about.
Sure. Well, anybody who wants to can get a hold of me personally at my email address is greenpriest, all one word, greenpriest@hotmail.ca. And I also have a website, ecosophian.wordpress.com. And so at the Ecosophian site, I do advertise when our full moon ceremonies are happening. So I'm sort of up in the boonies in Canada, though. So a lot of your listeners, it would be hard to get to any of the events that I help organize, but certainly anybody would be welcome.
Well, you never know. Plus, I mean, we do have listeners across the world here through Blog
Right.
Talk Radio. So we do actually have a lot of listeners all over the world. So just putting it out there in case there's anybody that is close by that might want to come visit. And
right
on. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. And kind of off subject, I don't know where you got that the cloak that you're wearing in the picture that they used on your interview.
My wonderful wife
so
knit
warm.
That for me. Yes, it is. Yeah, my wife actually knit it for me.
That's just been on my mind this whole time. I was like, I want one of those so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
tell
my favorite
start
piece.
Selling them.
Yeah, exactly.
She should start making them and sell them. So, all right, well, again,
in between
thank
all
you
her farming.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Again, thank you for
thank
coming
you very
on.
Much for having me.
And I'm actually
thanks
put
for
you on
having
hold,
me.
So if you you're very welcome and thank you for coming on. I'm going to put you on hold so you can hang up if you want to, but I'm just going to give out events that are happening across the United States that people have made me aware of that I announce at the end of every show. And you have a blessed evening or day. Let's see, it's a little bit earlier than it is here. So,
yeah.
So you,
you too,
night.
Samara. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. So it is now time for the upcoming events, and I just want to say one is an online event for the Wild Hunt. As everyone should know, when we do our Chasing Squirrels episode, we actually use the Wild Hunt a lot for Pagan News, and right now they really, really need your support. If you go out to thewildhunt.org and donate, it will help keep them going and cover all their costs so we can keep getting Pagan News without having to search for ourselves, because and they have their own original articles, so please support them if they can. Any donation will help them. So, and then let's see, also we have this Saturday, April 7th at Infinite Magic in Columbia, Tennessee, Practical Protection Magic. That's April 7th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., and class will be $30 for non-members. So you can contact Infinite Magic at Nashville Highway Suite A, 2549 Nashville Highway Suite A, Columbia, Tennessee. Then let's see, what else do we have coming up? We have Mama Ruby's Holistic Mystic Expo in Owensboro, Kentucky, at the Owensboro Convention Center. That is April 13th through the 15th. And let's see, I'm trying to see if there's a cost at the door. I don't see one right now, but it doesn't mean there's not. But they will have everything from special events, merchants and masters and celebrities, psychics, metaphysical authors, and fantasy art artists. So please go. And then we have... now there's lots of festivals coming up, but I'm not getting to them yet. April 20th, Ascension Magic and the Three Rays of Witchcraft with Christopher Hinzak, and that will be in Jackson, Mississippi. It looks like it's going to be at Hecate's Cauldron of Mississippi. More information is at hecate's-cauldron.org. you can get more information, and that is Friday, April 20th at 7:30 p.m. And it looks like that actually is over multiple days possibly, so please check it out. Then we have EarthFest 2018, Saturday, April 28th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Knoxville Botanical Garden and Arboretum in Knoxville, Tennessee. And it looks like the next thing I have, I'll go ahead and go through the first weekend of May. Friday, May 4th is Midian's 2018 May Day. It's the 4th through the 6th at Midian Festival and Events in Springville, Indiana. You can get tickets at campmidian.com. And that's actually all I have right now. So if you have any events that you would like for us to announce on the air, please contact us at facebook.com/treeoflife, L-O-U-K-Y. Send us a message, and we will put whatever event you have on the air. You can also, if you have, and it's easy as if you have a Facebook event, just shoot us the link. So you can also message me directly. My name online or on Facebook is Samara Luna, S-Y-M-A-R-A and L-U-N-A. So, and I do want to apologize to everyone that over the last month I haven't been on as much. I've actually had two deaths in the family. So hopefully that's all over with. Everything will at least go back to some similarity of normal, and I won't be off anymore. So, again, thanks to Ravenfire and Ulf, who I know have picked up over the past to help me out. But as of right now, I guess that is it for tonight. So I want to give everyone, just tell everyone have a blessed night, and we will talk to you next week. And I do have it in the works to bring Patrick McCollum back, so hopefully he will be back soon. Probably not next week, but I'm hoping soon. So we might be doing a Chasing Squirrels episode next week. So again, everyone have a blessed evening. And this is some new music I've not played before, I don't think. The artist is Cynthia Skeen. And since we have a little bit of time left, actually, before the show is actually supposed to be over, I'm going to go ahead and play her, or their, I don't know if it's female or male, for a group. I'm going to go ahead and play, it's a little bit longer song, but it's called The Tree at the Center. So I thought that would be neat, you know, Tree of Life Community Center. So, again, we'll talk to you next week. Have a good night.
are listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.